We got a special guest in the building.
Good morning. Yeah, welcome back, everybody. Welcome back to the show. This is episode 539 of the Two Dumb Yinzers. How are you doing today, Mike?
I'm doing great. I'm excited for today's episode. Can't wait.
Well, you know, I got to say, Mike, I'm excited about today's show, too. But today's the NFL draft eve, if you will.
Yes.
What you experience as a kid is what I experience right now in the adult life. And I look forward to this all year. And, you know, and like I said, tomorrow's the big day. This is the same as being a kid and knowing the very next day you're going to wake up and there's going to be presents under the tree. I couldn't be more excited. And as you said, today is it's going to be a good episode. I'll get more into that in just a moment.
Can only imagine what the players are feeling today.
I know. I wish we had somebody on the show that was a former NFL player that went through the draft process.
Right?
But you never know.
You never know.
Derpy, are you there? Can you hear me? Yeah. See, make sure I catch him before because he has that stupid.
Oh, he's good.
He has that fire alarm.
Yeah, he's fine. He's fine. All Derpy's right. good. Yeah, Derpy's right. good. He's on his best behavior.
All right. Why do you have him muted?
No. Okay. He's good. He's on his best behavior.
Mike, you know, I was thinking the other day, have you ever seen these people in Pittsburgh? Apparently they order pizza and they get it made. Excuse me. And they don't put the cheese on it. There's certain pizza places that they go, they make the whole pizza, except for the cheese. They put it in the oven and then they take it out and then they put the cheese on top cold and they serve it and sell it like it. I got this craving for that. And I don't know why. I've never had pizza like that. I seen a post on Facebook the other day and I thought to myself, man, that looks good.
Yeah.
Have you ever had pizza like that?
I've never had pizza like that.
Man, now I'm just kind of craving it, you know?
Yeah.
And I know my luck, I'll get it and it'll be terrible.
Yeah.
You know,
it sounds good.
It does sound good.
I'll try.
Good morning, Derpy.
Am I here?
I'm trying. Yeah. Derpy, we're going to have a guest coming on here in a little bit.
Actually, I just saw the participants. Our guest is here.
I do need you to be on your best behavior. None of your shenanigans today.
I'm worried about you, Ryan. I'm worried about you.
Hey, you just worry about yourself there, Derpy. How you doing? You all right today?
I'm doing great.
All right, guys. I want to get into this. Yeah.
I'm doing great. I was just saying I was doing great. And
then thinking aloud.
I'm ready to go.
All right, man. I got to cover this Pittsburgh Pirates real quick because we do have something special coming up real soon. You may have seen it being promoted on our social media, but I will break the big news here in just a moment because I have to get through this Pirate news as much as I don't want to, but they keep winning now. They were on the 6-game losing streak. The Pittsburgh Pirates beat the Milwaukee Brewers yesterday, 2-1. The Pirates are now 13-11. The Brewers dropped to 14-8. The Pirates again out-hit the Brewers 7-3. Mike, this Pirates team, they're schizophrenic as can be, but, you know, they keep pulling me back in. I thought for sure once they lost those 6 games in a row, this is going to be it. Then you have Milwaukee come to town, and they're in first place. But they keep pulling me in, man. And I guess this is what gets hold you over till football season, right?
Yeah, I was surprised how they bounced back. I thought, you know, this was going to be a long, 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 long losing streak, and they proved me wrong. I'm glad they did. This team surprised me. They're battling back. They're showing a spine, showing a backbone, and I'm loving it. You know, because it would have been easy to throw in the towel at that point.
Absolutely.
And even, you know, like, even though it's early in the season,
but
like,
you know, that's not out seen of the it Pirates. With, yeah. I mean, that, you know,
yeah.
with the exception of last year starting 20-8,
yeah,
you know, they generally do. I mean, they start bad and the season's pretty much over by mid May and it's terrible.
Yeah.
But this team is keeping us in it, guys. Andrew McCutchen, 2 days in a row now, he's led off with a home run. He led off the game. He's batting lead off. Also, Mike, he has now 24 career leadoff home runs.
That's insane.
And check this out. Between 2023 and 2024, when he bats leadoff, he's hitting .476. So why isn't Andrew McCutchen in that first spot more often? Maybe that would be something that will change. But We'll see. We'll see if the Pirates could keep it together. We'll see if Andrew McCutchen can keep this thing going. Yeah. But as I said yesterday, Mike, there's no reason that Andrew McCutchen at his age should be carrying this baseball team.
No.
You know, if he's doing these things that he's doing out of luxury, that's fantastic. But if he's the only one that's actually, you know, putting in this work and getting the results, that's not cool. The rest of this team has to step it up. But, Mike, we did have other people with some base hits yesterday. Big Stacks, Brian Reynolds, Key Brian Hayes, Connor Joe, O'Neal Cruz, and Bart. They all had one hit to go along with Andrew McCutchen's two-hit game, again, where he hits a leadoff home run for the second day in a row, Mike.
Yeah. I just wish, like, he would have been a leadoff hitter, like, his entire career. Imagine how much an even better career he would have had at leadoff, because he's a really good leadoff hitter.
Absolutely, man. So we'll see it moving forward. You know, this team is not a bad team. That's the thing. At the end of the day, when you look at this Pittsburgh Pirates team, they're not a bad they're not a bad baseball team. Maybe they, you know, they got to get a couple years under their belt together to make a serious run. But right now, I look top to bottom. There's nobody that I when I see him coming in the lineup, I'm like, oh no, not him. Yeah. I'm satisfied with this team. And once you bring Paul Skeens up from the minors, you know, I think things are going to be okay, Mike.
Yeah, I think so too. And my God, just, that top of the rotation that you can have with Skeens, Jones, Mitch Keller, now Bailey Falter, the way he's seems like he's turning his career around at a very opportune time for the Pirates. So, hey, nice 1-2-3, maybe even fourth starter right off the bat. He's got to find that fifth arm.
I got to say, I'm very surprised. He came over from Philadelphia last year at 0-7.
Yeah.
He finished the season 2-9. I did not think, you know, I was one of the people that was totally against Bailey Falter. Falter goes seven innings yesterday, seven whole innings, guys, three hits, gives up one earned run, two walks, and he has eight strikeouts.
Yeah.
Along with Colin Olderman and David Bednar, they seal the deal. They get the win 2-1 over the Brewers, guys. They move up the ladder. The NL Central now looks like this. The Brewers at top, the Cubs a half game out of first place. The Reds a game and a half out of first place. The Pirates two games out of first place. So your top four teams are all within two games. And the Cardinals, who I love having another bad season, they're sitting in the basement with a five game. They're back five games. So, Mike, I mean, you know, we joked at the beginning of the week, if the Pirates could sweep the Brewers, they could be in good shape. And here they are. They're one game away from winning the series and two from sweeping them.
Yeah, and, you know, hey, if we're going to sit here and criticize them, we, you know, give them the props and the respect when they do well. And, you know, they're playing, they're winning the games against the team that they have historically struggled against.
And absolutely.
To be, you know, like you said, after this series, if they can potentially sweep them, be like, what, a half game out of first, when we thought, oh, my God, the bottom's out, they're just going to, how far can they fall? So,
right.
Ooh. A huge series, and they're responding the way they need to. They may not be pretty wins, but they're wins.
But then you work your way out west. They go out to San Francisco on Friday. That's always tough. Even when San Francisco is always a tough place to play. And then they play Oakland. So, you know, maybe we can get a little.
Hopefully, Oakland, you know, that should be the team we should be able to really find our hitting, really find our mojo against.
Because you're right.
You know, that team, like, the ownership group has given up on them. They're demoting good players because they're wearing a wristband saying don't move the team. So they're purposely trying to tank. What's that doing for the morale of that team?
They have a disaster out there. Yeah, Whatever happens, it is a disaster.
Yeah, like you hope for the Pirates that they can take advantage of the A's.
Right. But last year we didn't. Remember we played the A's?
Yeah, we didn't, yeah.
And they were the worst team in the league, and we lost. We lost two out of three.
Yeah. Yeah, because that was a rough stretch. I don't want to think about those games.
But between now and then, they still have to play the Brewers, guys. Today, the probable pitchers are Quinn Priester is not on the list. He's supposed to be the pitcher today in the rotation. After last week's disaster when he was in there, they decided to make a change. And Josh Fleming, the left-hander, will be on the hill today. Coming in with a 1-0 record, a 1.74 ERA and 7 Ks on the season. And they'll be facing right-handed pitcher Bryce Wilson, who's 2-0. He has a 3.29, and he has 12 Ks on the season. So, and then tomorrow's back to the top of the rotation, and I can't think of who they're – Peralta. So it's going to be Mitch Keller and Peralta tomorrow. So that should be the toughest one, because I think Peralta has like 30 some strikeouts, something like this so far. So let's win this game, win the series, and then we'll worry about that tomorrow, right?
Exactly. He's got to take it one game at a time.
Darby, why do you got to take it one day at a time with, in baseball?
162.
There That's we right, go, baby. Derby.
162. And if I hear your fire alarm, Derby, I don't know what I'm going to do. Do you take care of that, please? A couple other things, Mikey, about Andrew McCutchen. As I mentioned, he hit his 24th career leadoff home run. He has 100 career home runs at PNC Park. 100 home runs at PNC Park. He has 1,000 career singles as a Pirate. I don't know. Is baseball, do they have a waiting period for Hall of Fame?
Yeah, I believe they do. I believe it's like the standard 5 years.
Okay.
But I could be wrong. You know, baseball is a weird sport.
I mean, if Andrew McCutchen ain't in the first opportunity that he gets, I think it would be insane. And especially after guys like Bryce Harper, who you know are going to get in.
Yeah.
As I was reading off the statistics yesterday, Andrew McCutchen has a lot of better statistics than Bryce Harper does, despite, you know, how much you hear how great this guy is.
And there's guys, though, too, that had, like, better resumes than Kutch that still weren't first ballot Hall of Famers.
You're right.
So it's all about, like, who's in that class with you.
I think they should look at it and say, hey, there's a Pittsburgh Pirate. Let's throw him in there.
Right? Throw us a bone, please.
You know? But he's doing great things, Andrew McCutchen. Love him. He's a 476 leadoff hitter, Mike, over the past two seasons. Yeah. So it'd be great to see them keep him in that spot.
Yeah, keep him there. But like you said, you know, we don't want to have to be counting on him to be the one who does everything for us.
And you know, this is important to me. In their white jerseys, they're 3-2. In their black jerseys, they're 7-3. Their gray jerseys, they're 3-4. In their specialty black jersey, the alternates, they're 0-1. And in the yellow City Connect jerseys, they are also 0-1. So, because that means a lot, you know, that's...
hey, you look good, you feel good, you play good.
That's right.
The bus said that one time. You know, you look good, you feel good, you play good. So if it works for the bus, it should work for the Buckeyes.
That's right.
Yeah.
Aliquippa, Mike, of course, we talk about Aliquippa a lot, our local team here. Right outside of Pittsburgh, John Tracy. Now, a lot of these guys that you hear about, Mike, the guy going to Penn State, the guy going here, the guy going there. John Tracy from Aliquippa, the running back, he, in my opinion, is the best skill player on that team. And that says a lot.
Yeah, because they got some really good players.
They got some really good players. Now, he's going – he just committed to Concord University, but I really believe he should be somewhere bigger. But I think that he had some kind of – he had some kind of off-field issues.
Okay.
And I'm not real sure they were, but I seen him play at a young age with my middle son, and he was unbelievable. I mean, these other kids didn't even belong on the same field as he did, and he continued that all the way through high school. And again, you know, I mean, they won, what, back-to-back state championships?
Yeah.
I really hope that he does well. Maybe he could transfer out of Concord one day. And go somewhere. Because, Mike, I got to tell you, he's the best player on that team.
And that is saying something, too, because you got, what, Tyke, who's going up to Penn State this year, or another kid going to, what, Pitt, I believe?
Yeah.
Yeah, so they have a lot of talent over there. And if he's the best of the bunch, and those guys are, what, four-star recruits as well, and, whew. If he did have something, hopefully, you know,
I just think grow up,
you
problem.
Mature, and boom, yeah.
Because, like I said, if you would watch any, and a lot of times you get a chance to watch the playoff games here on TV, you get to watch the championship game down at the, you know, the stadium. You watch the game, and Tyke could be getting 3-4 yard gains. John Tracy gets in, and he busts it immediately. He'll go 40-50 yard. He's lightning in a bottle. He really is. So keep an eye on him. Again, that's John Tracy. He's heading to Concord University. Just committed as of yesterday. I guess we could sneak into some football here.
Yes.
This is the eve of the draft. Tomorrow, it's 8 o'clock p.m. The draft is going to take place, Mike, round one. Mm-hmm. Then on Friday, you get round two and three. And Saturday, they wrap it up with rounds 4-7. Latest rumors I hear, Mike, is are these. Of course, you heard about 30 or 40 different Steelers were taken in the first round. This is the latest rumor that I got. Steelers may be looking to trade up with Denver at 12 to draft Toledo's cornerback Quinnen Mitchell. Also, the Eagles are also looking to trade up with Denver. Mitchell is considered the top cornerback in the draft. Mike, is there any validity in that rumor?
I don't know. Like, this time of the year, you hear all types of rumors.
Yeah.
So you got to take everything with a grain of salt. You know, is it, you know, is someone, you know, on the inside leaking this to, you know, see, you know, what's the other side going to say? What are other teams going to say?
And as you were saying yesterday, people do this often. Teams do this often. They try to mislead other teams.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a team in their division that's trying to move up and get a guy, and they're, you know, they don't want that to happen.
Yeah, like we saw it, like prime example was last year with CJ Stroud with that, what, the C3 exam.
Yeah.
It was like, and it came out after the draft and after he was already signed, it was like Houston leaked it because they wanted him to fall to number two. They wanted to be able to get him.
Exactly.
So this, I tell you what, there's a lot of, you know, disinformation, good and bad coming out about players, about what teams want to do. Like, but to move up from 20 to 12, that's going to take some serious ammunition, I would believe. But I wouldn't be opposed to the player because, yeah, he went to a smaller school, but you look at the film, you look at what he did down in the Senior Bowl. He ain't like Mike Tomlin was like, hey, I want you going up against every wide receiver here from, like, you know, the best on down. And the kid did that. So, you know, is that why people are saying that? Because Tomlin had a good one-on-one with him, but Tomlin even said, hey, I do that stuff at smokescreen sometimes of talking to players to make people think this is who we're going to go with. So there's a lot of, you know, a lot of spycraft going on this time of the year.
But again, that's tomorrow, guys. Tomorrow night, 8 p.m., round one of the NFL draft. Super excited, everybody. I do want to say this is the big surprise, guys. We do have a special guest with us today. You can see on the screen, it's Mike, myself, and it isn't Derpy that you see on the screen. It is Tim Worley. Guys, the number 7 overall pick in the 1989 NFL draft, former running back of the Pittsburgh Steelers, former Georgia Bulldog. Welcome, everybody, Tim Worley. Tim, super great to have you on, my man. I got to say this to you, sir. If I would have known at 12 years old that I would be doing something like this, talking with the guy that, I mean, come on, everybody plays football in the backyard. I wanted to be 38. I wanted to be Tim Worley. And at that age, I knew nothing else. And like I said, for me to be in this position, it's a great honor, sir. And I welcome you to the show, Tim. Great to see you, my man.
Hey, thank you, guys. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, man. Appreciate you guys inviting me, man. It's an honor after all these years to still be, you know, get invited to do different things, you know. So I'm humbled.
Yeah. I was telling Ryan off air, like, one of my earliest Steeler memories are like the teams that you were on with, you, Rod Woodson, Damarney Dawson, all those guys. So when Ryan told me that you were coming on, it was like Ryan said, that little kid inside of you is uber excited.
So, yeah, man, don't let us fool you, Tim. We are super freaking out inside, but we're doing everything we can to hold it together for you, sir. Tim Worley, of course, the rookie season 1989, I remember this very well because I remember the season. Everybody in the division finished 9-7, except for the last place team. I believe they finished 8-8, whatever. The Steelers go on to, in a crazy game against Houston in the playoffs, they win this game, and then they lose by one to a tough Denver team. This season, with the exception of, as far as the Steelers go, because other early memories would take me back to Refrigerator Perry and the Walter Payton team in Chicago. But besides for that, this is it. When I think of my childhood, I think of, again, number 38. I think of number 6, 33, 83. These were the people that we wanted to be.
Yeah.
You know?
Wow. That's an honor, man. I mean, you know, it was a lot of great memories. You don't really realize, guys, what you had and how you influence people until you're actually away from it for years.
Yeah.
And that was the case with me. You know, I really didn't know what I had at that time. I was 22, 23 years old as a rookie, and had the world in the palm of my hands, playing for my favorite childhood team, the Pittsburgh Steelers, ever since I was 9 years old, growing up in North Carolina. And it was like a dream come true. And but I got to be honest, man, to hear you guys say that you guys wore number 38 and you wanted to be that guy, absolutely, it just blows my mind, because I never, at that age in my 20s, I just didn't get it. The influence, you know. But now at 57, going on 58, I look back, and besides, you guys are telling my age now. I look back, man, and I'm blown away. I'm humble.
And I remember when I was a kid, and I do want to start by saying, in my storage unit, I do have a Tim Worley starting lineup action figure. I was actually telling Mike, I said, how weird would it be if I showed up with this action figure and started showing it to him? But
oh my goodness.
I remember being a kid, and I wanted a Tim Worley jersey, and my mom ended up getting me Bubby. Now, don't get me wrong, I know Bubby's your dude and everything, but when you're a kid and you're expecting Worley and you get Brister, but you know what? I survived. I roughed through it, and I got my Bubby Brister shirt. But like I said, I do have that Tim Worley starting lineup action figure. I still do.
Wow! That's wild, man.
Now you were saying, Tim, you were saying that the Steelers have always been your team, even growing up in North Carolina. And I do know, I have a little bit of backstory on this. Where you grew up, a lot of people were either Steeler fans or Cowboys fans. And how did you land on the right side of the fence? We have to know.
Well, you know, it's a long story, and I'll try to keep it as brief as possible. But, you know, in North Carolina, you know, like back then, you know, the three channels was CBS, ABC, NBC. And you know, in that area, southeastern North Carolina, we got a lot of NBC stuff. So the Steelers showed up a lot. Okay, the Redskins showed up a lot on Sundays, and the Cowboys.
Yeah,
and so you know we had a lot of guys in my neighborhood. You know, it was either Cowboys or Steelers. Now, my mother, okay, she's 80. I'm not gonna. She's
all right. You're fine.
She's 82. Soon to be 83. Her favorite football player was always Mean Joe Green.
Okay.
Okay. And so when she bought me a Pittsburgh Steeler jacket and a toboggan, you know, when I was like 9 or 10 years old. And let me tell you something, buddy. Ever since that day, man, I became a diehard Steeler guy. You know, the Lynn Swans, the LC Greenwoods, Jack Hams, Lambert. I can name them all. You know, Bradshaw, Aldi, Webster, all the guys. Franco, God bless his soul, Rocky. Yes. And I was just like, man, the Steelers. And so, but I became a hater of the Cowboys.
You know, it's almost like the next natural step when you're a Steeler fan is to hate the Cowboys.
Yeah.
You know, nowadays, of course, it's the Ravens. We hate them guys. You're always going to hate the Cowboys. And there for about 20 years, we weren't too fond of the Patriots either. But thank God that's behind us. a couple of things. For you, Tim, you were in the draft. Listen to this, guys. I'm just in unbelief of the people that came up in your class. I mean, listen to this. Troy Aikman, Barry Sanders, Derek Thomas, Deion Sanders, Steve Atwater, Eric Metcalf, Andre Rison. I mean, that is, you know, from the top of my head, it's got to be one of the best drafts I can remember.
Yeah. I'm blown away, man, because I will always be a part of what the people say, the fans say all over the world, that was the best NFL draft in the history of the NFL draft, 1989. And to be amongst those guys, you look at the top 10, but look at the rest of the guys along in that first round. You know, it's just amazing. One of the things that I used to tell people, you know, when I was in high school, I think there was a kid from Aliquippa. His name was Brian something. I think he was the number one back in the nation.
Okay.
If you guys remember that, he went to Pitt, and I think he got hurt. He was the number one back in the nation at that time. And okay. I think I was the number three after Aaron Emanuel that went to USC. And Sammy Smith, he was ahead. No, Sammy was number three. I was number four in the nation, right?
Okay.
And so when we got drafted in that draft, I was number seven. Sammy Smith was number eight.
Oh, wow. Nice.
So I thought, yeah, I thought it wasn't a coincidence, but.
You're right.
The guys in that draft, you know, Donnell Wolford, man, me and him, we competed against each other in high school for our entire high school career. Wow. Fayetteville, North Carolina, Lumberton, North Carolina. We went at it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And he ended up being a first round pick. So just an amazing talent.
That it is, you know, I mean, here we are on the eve of the NFL draft. We're talking to Tim Worley about the 1989 draft. I mean, this is my day, guys. I come on. Pick Mike, pick one day this year so far that you could even compare to what's going on right now.
Outside of the Super Bowl, this right here for me is like one of the most exciting days of the year for NFL. As just like a fan of football, because all these guys that are going to be drafted, you know, you watch them through college. Some of these kids that you've heard about when they were in high school, now to see where they're going to go into the pros. Like, what do you think is going through their minds right now, like the day before the draft?
Well, I can speak from my experience and a couple more guys that I was around during the draft day. You know, when I go back, you know, you're talking about 35 years ago. That's a long time, man.
Yeah.
And things have changed drastically. And, you know, to make a long story short, you know, back then, you know, I declared my running mate at Georgia, Keith Henderson, and I think Barry Sanders, we were the only three redshirt juniors that came out that year. Okay. And so at the time, I'm going to give you the whole story. At the time, you know, we wasn't allowed to go to the combine.
No way.
People don't know that. I couldn't go to the combine. Henderson couldn't go. And I don't think Barry could go. Right.
Oh, wow.
And so what happened, all 28 teams at one time, they came to work me out on one day, you know, in Athens, Georgia. So I had what they call today your pro day.
Yeah.
All right. And so ran the 40 and then did the vertical. They said, that's it. We don't need to see nothing else. And I tell you guys, a lot of people don't know this. A lot of people don't know this, guys. Let me give you a little inside history. There were the teams that really showed interest. You know, it was about six or seven teams that really was, you know, considering, okay, we're going to take you at this pick in the first round, right?
Right.
And so, you know, the Falcons, it was Green Bay, Steelers, San Diego Chargers, all that stuff. But the Detroit Lions pulled me to the side, guys, after the workout and everything, right? Now, listen to this. And they said, listen, Barry Sanders supposed to be declaring himself eligible for the draft, but he haven't done it yet. And we don't know if he's going to do it or remain his senior year. They said this, guys. Now, you heard this from me. They said, listen, if he doesn't come out, we have the third pick. We're going to select you if you're available.
Wow.
And you guys, you know what I said to myself? I said, no, you're not.
Maybe football isn't what I'm going to do. Wow. Can you imagine? And,
you know, I would have went. I got family.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
But at the time, I'm like, Detroit? No.
Right.
Wow. But Steelers came along, did their things, made some trades with Mike Merriweather, with the Vikings. I remember that whole process. And all of a sudden, there I am. I knew where I was going, guys, the night before I got picked.
Did you really?
Wow.
Yes, sir. I did. There's a little bit of inside stuff. I didn't get a chance. I didn't go to New York. I got invited, but I didn't go. I had my whole team, my PR team, my agent and everything. Everything was based in California, Los Angeles and Beverly Hills. And so we had a big old draft party at the, if you guys remember, Eddie Murphy, Beverly Hills Cop at the Beverly Palm Hotel.
So we had
this huge draft party, and we invited all the UCLA football players, the SC football players. And I'll never forget Ralph. I think it was Ralph Berlin and somebody else were sitting at the table, and I read Pete Rozelle's lips, man. He said, Tim Worley. I said, all right, get ready to be a Steeler. I already knew.
That's awesome.
But
man.
What an amazing memory and time, and how I felt. It wasn't that nerve-wracking for me, guys, because I knew I knew where I was going.
Yeah. Right.
But what made it nerve-wracking for me, guys, was when that $1 million signing bonus showed up FedEx in California in my mailbox.
Oh,
that's
man.
When I got nervous.
Yeah, you're right. Right. Tim, as you mentioned, you know, at you went and you did these sprints, you did the verticals. They said, you know what? No question. We love this guy. A lot of people, and correct me if I'm wrong, a lot of people don't know that you were a big track star in high school. You won multiple state titles. Is that accurate?
Yes, sir. I was the 1985 North Carolina State 100-meter, 200-meter champion. My best 100-meter time, guys, in high school, I think I was a 10:35, something like that.
Okay. Wow.
And I was a consistent 10:5, 10:4. In my 200, I was champion. My best was like right at 20:89, a consistent 21:2, 21 flat. And I got a chance to win the I don't know if you guys remember this, TAC. Everything's AAU now. It used to be TAC Junior Olympics.
Yeah.
TAC okay. Olympics, right?
Right.
And I won the Junior National Championship down in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I just posted something on my Facebook a couple of days ago because I'm a track guy. I love track. It's,
right.
It's one of my favorite sports. And I won the 100 meters, the championship that year in 84. And what was crazy, guys, is all the guys that I ran against, a lot of them ran in the Olympics.
Really?
Yes. You got guys like Floyd Hurd. You got guys like Dennis Mitchell. Those guys ran in the Olympics, and I was running right there with him. And I don't know if you guys remember this guy. He's my homeboy, Lee McCray. He was a track star at Pitt.
I was going to say, that sounds real familiar. Yeah.
Okay. We used to go head to head, man, and he was a little older than me, and he would always edge me out. But that guy, Lee McCray, he was probably one of the quickest guys out the gate off the line that I'd ever seen. This cat literally ran, and I am not kidding, hand time, like almost a 4 flat in the 40, man.
Wow.
I am not kidding. This guy was amazing. Lee McCray, that's my homeboy. But yeah, man, I enjoy track. I love track season. The Olympics is coming up this year, and I'm excited about what we have in the blocks, you know, on both sides, male and female. I tell people today, if I was running track today and the training and all the equipment and technology, I would be a consistent 900 meters.
Right.
You know, because we trained the way we trained, man, it was just raw old school training, man. Mm. And we just had raw speed, you know?
Absolutely.
Like, everything now is like all scientific and data driven, and like you can put like sensors on you can run in the wind tunnel, like aerodynamics, body mechanics, how to get every ounce of speed out of
guys. Hey guys, what people don't realize, when I reported to Georgia, right? And I gotta bring up the great Vince Dooley. I love that man to life. And you know, he passed away a year or two ago. And one of the things that he said, and I'll never forget it, he said the two fastest athletes and running backs he've ever coached was Herschel Walker and Tim Worley.
Wow.
And he said that he thought Herschel could get me, but he can edge me out. I beg to differ. But but you know, when Herschel reported to Georgia as a freshman, I think Herschel ran a 4.22, 4.23. When I reported to Georgia at 6'2½, 216, I ran a 4.25.
Wow.
Okay. And by the time I blew my knee out, that took a lot from
that
me.
That was going to be my next question. Year. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, you're on the weight training and you're building your body, you're getting stronger and you're getting faster. Even with that knee injury that knocked me out for almost 2 years, I was still able to come back. And my junior year at Georgia at 232 pounds, clock a 4.35.
Wow. Yeah. So that's where I was going to go, Tim.
That is fast.
You know, you're doing amazing things in high school. You're breaking records. You're going to state championships. You go to college, same thing. Then you hit sophomore year. You blow your ACL. You got a long recovery. At that point, Tim, do you start to be, are you concerned that maybe your future in football may be in jeopardy?
Oh, most definitely. I was when I blew my knee out, guys, and it happened where everything was going to the sky, to the moon.
Yeah,
I was on my way up. Me and a guy named Keith Henderson, one of my good friends. You know, we had outstanding freshman years, and they were predicting us to be like all world, not just in the SEC, but nationwide. And I had found my niche. You know, it took me a little bit of time to make that adjustment, you know, from high school to college. A lot of people always say that, you know, was there a big adjustment from college to the NFL? Absolutely not. The adjustment was more mental, not physical, but I was very physical.
Right.
That adjustment came from high school to college because it sped up a little bit more and it was a little more physical. You know, the hitting was a little more intense. And so I had to catch up in that area. And so once I got to that point, man, I felt like I could go out on the field in college and the SEC and just dominate. I feel like I commanded, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'll never forget, guys, after the South Carolina game in 86, we beat them in Columbia that night, that weekend. The next weekend, I come back. We open up with Ole Miss. One afternoon at 1 o'clock, first carry, first offensive series. I get a handoff, off tackle, left side, 6 yards, plant my foot, went to spin, linebacker collapsed my knee. I tell you guys, I didn't know it was shredded like it was, but I felt the funny feeling in my leg actually felt like a noodle, you know? But I walked off the field. I limped off the field. And once I got on the training table on the sideline, you know, the doctor checked me out. He just looked at me like with not blanking. He said, "You're done."
Oh.
I said, "What?" He said, "You're done." And then he came back 10 minutes later after he conferred with a few people. And they said, "Tim, you're done for the year." I said, "Oh, man." And let me tell you, dude, where I was at that time, because football was my world.
Yeah,
you're right.
And I thought for a long time that, you know, my identity was solely locked up in being an athlete, which, you know, I found that not to be true today, you know. And so when that happened, guys, I never gave up, but I went through a process of just, you know, pity parties. I stopped going to class. I missed class so much, but I became ineligible at Georgia. A lot of people don't know this. And I had to go to a junior college for a semester or two just to re-enter Georgia.
Wow.
And meanwhile, I'm rehabbing my knee. Okay. And it took me literally a solid year and a half to recover from that knee injury.
Wow.
Yeah. And like back then,
I was going to say, I was preparing myself, guys, because one of the things that I was concerned about was my speed. Okay. Cause I relied on my speed, but I was already making plans in the back of my head because, you know, if I had to went to college straight out of high school, I was going to go to special forces. I was going to go to the Marines or be a Navy SEAL.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
And so I was thinking, okay, I can heal up enough where I can just, you know, go to the Marines. Because I was the type of person, I wanted to see the world, man.
Right.
My last name's Worley, so I want to see the world.
Right. Tim, I do want to ask you this. I mean, obviously, these are amazing stories from college. Do you like the fact that our Pittsburgh Steelers seem to be, you know, everybody for the past few seasons, at least, we're bringing in Broderick Jones from Georgia, bringing in the tight end Washington from Georgia. This year, we're talking about Mims Pickens from Georgia.
Yeah.
That's got to be exciting for you as well, being a Georgia alum, being a former Pittsburgh Steeler, you know, that's got to be really cool to see.
I love it. I love it. You know, I did the show yesterday with Ralph.
Yeah.
And we were talking about, we were talking about the state of Pennsylvania as a whole. You know, you got the Steelers and you got the Eagles. State of Pennsylvania loved the University of Georgia.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Football players.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Philadelphia got the whole freaking defense, Georgia's defense.
Yeah, it's like their entire D line is all Georgia Bulldogs and the linebackers. Exactly.
I would have taken Jalen Carter for. I mean, come on, that guy's a beast, man. You're absolutely right. Absolutely right. These Pennsylvania teams are full of Georgia Bulldogs. It's wild, man.
Hey, you know what? I like to say I set the tone for that, but I know that's not true.
Well, hey, you know what? After you.
You can take the credit for that.
Absolutely. And you know what? After you, Tim, you had who else? Hines Ward came along from Georgia. So, I mean, you know, it didn't really stop. It's always been a nice it seems like everybody that we get from Georgia are all top quality players. I mean, you know, nobody could deny that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when I look back at UGA, man, we, you know, I think even way back with Wally Butts, you know, the head coach back, the guy that coached not Charlie Trippi, but Fran Tarkenton and all those guys, you know, you got, and then Dooley came along, set the tone, you know, and now you got Mark Rick, Jim Don, and now you got Kirby Smart. Okay. And Coach Smart, you know, the one thing that I like about Coach Smart is his defensive mind. And I've always believed that I love a defensive head coach.
Yes, you know, absolutely.
Not so much an offensive head coach because defense win championships.
Right.
Yep. You know?
And offenses win a lot of games. But Coach Smart, his mentality, and plus he played the game, guys. He's not a textbook coach.
Right.
He played the game and he played it at a very high level. And so he's like, prove it. If you say you elite, prove it.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's what I'm talking about. You get me excited right now. Enough of all that talk. Let's put it to action.
You're right.
You know? So that program right now stands apart. It's set apart. It's elite. And I think, guys, you know, I know we're not jumping into the Georgia stuff right now, but I think these guys are going to set the tone. They've already set the tone, but I think they're going to redo it this year. I think they're pissed off at what happened in the SEC championship.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yep.
I got to tell you, I mean, Pitt is, you know, we don't have much success with our Pitt college football team. So a lot of times you look elsewhere, and I really enjoyed, I got to say, as a Pitt fan, I enjoyed the run by Georgia. It was a lot of fun. Very dominant squad. Let me move forward real quick here. Now, we know that you're a minister now, correct, Tim?
Yes, sir. I am an evangelist. I do a lot of ministry. Hey, listen, can you guys believe that?
Well, it's crazy where life takes you, you know?
But yeah. The question, I got a question on the board from Brian Pasquale. He asks, Tim, were you religious back when you were going through the rehab of the injury in college? Or hadn't you?
Listen, I grew up in the church, guys. I was raised by a Christian dad and a Christian mother. And my dad passed away last year.
Oh,
and he passed away at age 85. Oh. And nobody, you know, we wasn't a perfect family, but we were raised knowing who God is and knowing to have a reverent respect for God and for ourselves and for people. And so that seed got planted in me. And when I went through all of my hard times and just in college alone, which was one of the hardest things that I went through in college was recovering from that knee injury. Of course, you know, I prayed. I had people pray over me. I always acknowledged God. But one of the things that I'm still upset with is that year in 86 when I blew my knee out, the dog Ugga, the mascot got more cards, get well cards than I did. So I'm still angry about that.
You ain't looked at the mascot the same ever since, huh?
Well, it looks Ugga, that squished face, man. It's hard not to, you know, feel sorry for Ugga.
Tim, what's but your... Yeah,
man, I've never been... And I tell people, man, when I was young, I didn't acknowledge the good Lord like I do now. I have a personal relationship now.
Right.
And, you know, it's not a religion for me. It's my personal walk with him. I had to call on my life, guys, ever since I was a teenager. And people kept telling me that, and I knew it. And here's something I want to set apart.
Yeah.
I knew this stuff the whole time that I was in college, the whole time that I was in the NFL. But guys, I ran from it.
You're right.
I ran from it. If you follow my career, there's a lot of things that I got into. Why? Right. Because Tim Worley didn't know who Tim Worley was.
Right.
I thought my identity was just being an athlete. And I tried to fit in. I tried to blend in, knowing that I didn't. And I'll tell you guys something. And I don't want to get too deep, and I don't want us to start crying and carrying on. But listen, this is real, man, because it's about life, and I'm about other people. Absolutely. See, I had to die to myself, okay? And when I was a teenager and in my 20s and my 30s, it was all about me. It was all about me. And I got to that point, man, where I had to surrender. I had to surrender. And I'll tell you this, you guys will never forget this. I'll never forget this. Playoffs. When we played Houston. Okay. We played Houston in the playoff 89, right?
Yes.
I never forget it because I bought me a big 35,000 gold chain with diamonds putting on it to go out to Houston. You know, I was young and dumb, right. You know what I mean? And so we go to Houston, man, we win, I score. Gary Anderson kicked the winning field goal. Uh-huh. We're riding high. So I come back. We land at the airport. I had a limo waiting on me, guys. And I'm not going to get into detail, but I had a limo waiting on me, right? And me and some of the guys, we're in the back of the limo, right? We're popping champagne and this and that, right? And I had a come to Jesus moment, man.
Really, at that point?
23, yeah, man. And wow. And I had a moment, and I stopped. I put my drink down. I sat there with my hands, my head in my hands, and I'm kind of stooped over. And I won't mention any players, but one of the guys said, "Man, what's wrong?" And I said, "Man, this ain't it."
Wow.
Guys, I'm serious. I said to myself, and I get emotional. I said, "This ain't it." I said, "Is this what it's all about? You know, winning games and money and having a good time and all the women and this and that, right. And cars." I said, "Is this what it's all about?" Because I knew right then, guys, that there was something in me that I desired that nothing on the outside was going to satisfy.
Right.
And so,
as you said, you're on top of the world at that point, you know?
I had the world in the palm of my hands, guys. And I was like searching for stuff. And that's why I ran so hard from it. And that's why, I got in trouble with failing drug tests, DUIs, you know, using cocaine and drinking and getting in trouble because I was running from that call and I was searching for something that the outside couldn't give me. And we know that's Jesus Christ.
That's an amazing. I love that. Don't get me started
up in here, guys.
Man, Tim. Let me a couple more things. We don't have much time left. That's amazing. I love that. And the only reason I'm switching is because of the time. Tim, what is your favorite memory from being a Steeler? Of course, you played for, four seasons in Pittsburgh, then you went to Chicago. What's your favorite memory from being a Steeler? Now, me as a fan walking in and seeing that big green carpet when you walk into Three River Stadium, that old smell of Three River Stadium, seeing you guys down there. But you as a player, being in the locker room with the guys, being down there with Rod Woodson and Greg Lloyd and Merrill Hodge and Louie Lips, what is it that you could say that would be your favorite moment as a Pittsburgh Steeler, Tim?
Now, I have – I'm going to try to pinpoint this.
Okay.
Because I have lots of moments. And one even before I got to know my teammates, one of my best moments first of all, it was a dream come true. I'm playing for my childhood team. My childhood favorite NFL football team.
Yeah.
I'm getting ready to meet Mean Joe Green.
Oh, man.
Okay? And matter of fact, his birthday and my birthday are the same day, September 24th.
Get out.
No way.
Yeah, yeah. And so I'm about to meet Mean Joe Green. This is the guy, thanks Mean Joe in the commercials.
Right.
Rocky Blind.
Right.
You know, all these guys. And let me tell you what blew my mind before I get to the – to. And I know we got short on time. Before I get to the my teammates – what blew my mind is riding from the airport after I got drafted a couple of days later and entering the tunnel.
Wow.
And coming out of that tunnel, looking at the point and looking over to the left and seeing Three River Stadium lit up. Dude, I lost it.
Yeah.
That's still one of the greatest reveals ever, like going into a city, coming from that airport, because it's nothing but highways, hills. Once you go through that tunnel, like you said, yeah. Boom, there's everything, you know.
Yeah.
Three Rivers was right there, all lit up. And I still, when I have to drive down to that area, I just, it still gives me goosebumps when driving out and looking, because it's, you go from nothing to picturesque.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know what, guys? It's a trip, because, you know, I'm in Pittsburgh all the time. I'm back and forth in Pittsburgh.
That's what you were saying. That's awesome.
Yeah. I come back to training camp. I've been back 2 years in a row. Probably going to go again this year.
Nice.
The good Lord blessed me with a beautiful woman of God that lives in the city of Pittsburgh. So there was something about Pittsburgh that I loved.
Yeah, man.
I always thought they had pretty girls there.
Absolutely. It's just, it was meant to
but
be.
But even your... now, guys, when I come through, I love the drive. I could fly up, but I love that trip. People's like, man, that's 10 hours.
I was going to say, what's that, about 10? Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, so what? I love the drive. I love the mountains. I love riding through West Virginia, Virginia. Oh. Yeah, you know, and it's just on my way. Then coming through that tunnel, guys, yeah. I'm telling you, it's like the first time in 1989, wow. Right? And so I have my camera, my phone. It shouldn't be, because I'm driving. And I'll be videoing, guys, when I come through that exit, okay? When I come through that tunnel. But let me tell you guys something. What I used to do. Y'all know I used to race motorcycles, right?
I didn't know that.
Uh-uh. Man, I drove Bill Cowher crazy.
Oh, with the motorcycles.
I had my bikes at training camp. And he tried to tell me, he said, you know, Bill spit on you. He said, Tim, you can't have the bikes here, son. You know. But I used to come through that tunnel, man. You guys can tell I'm excited. I used to come through that tunnel, the Fort Pitt tunnel.
Yeah.
And you know how you can veer off, go straight downtown, or veer off, or go toward the north side?
Yes.
And then you can swing right and head to Monroeville.
Absolutely.
Okay. I used to come out of there doing 120, 130, and swing to the right, headed to Monroeville. I took the long route because I lived in Shadyside.
Okay. Man. Yeah, Coach Cowher was not loving that, I could tell you.
Yeah. But, man.
You played for both. You played for Chuck Knoll too, correct? Is that legendary time frame, or was it just?
I played for Coach Knoll, God bless his soul, 3 years, and I played for Coach Cowher.
Yeah.
Really, only 1 year, because that year that I was suspended didn't count. 1992, right. And that's a whole nother story within itself. Maybe we can do it another time.
Yeah.
And absolutely. I just tell you guys that whole process of what was going on through my mind at that time, because I was I love the city, but a lot of, and I chalked it up. I put on my big boy boots and I said, okay, let's roll. Because I really didn't like the role that I was playing with the Steelers for a minute. It kind of threw me off, you know, and to the point where I went to Coach Knoll, people don't know this, and I asked him personally, I said, why do you draft me? You know?
Yeah.
And because of the system, that trapping system that we were in, and me coming from Georgia, dropped me 7 yards deep, and give me the ball, get out of the way. And here I am, I'm in a 3-point stand in the veer formation, running traps, and I'm blocking most of the time.
Yeah.
And so for me, this was my 22-year-old mind thinking now. It's not the mind that I have now.
Right.
Because it was about me then, right? And I asked him, I grew enough, you know, cojones to go ask him, say, hey coach, why you draft me? Because I was frustrated. You know, and
absolutely,
you know,
right.
And then, you know, the fumbles and all that stuff, you know, when I fumbled against Cleveland 3 times, guys, I was in excellent. I always kept myself in excellent condition, but I wasn't in football shape.
Yeah.
Right. Okay? Right.
And Coach Knoll, he was the type of person. I love that man. He said, listen, get out there and make mistakes. That's the only way you're going to learn.
Yeah.
But one of the things that Coach Knoll told me, he said, I didn't draft you because of your running ability. I knew that was there. He said, I drafted because I thought you was a great blocker.
Hmm. What?
Yeah, he thought that that was one of my highest scores when they rated me, man.
Yeah.
Wow.
When you know how they rate you in the college, you know, they rated me If I can remember, I think George Rogers was probably one of the highest rated overall package running backs ever. Okay. They had me rated higher than him.
Really?
Wow.
Yes. And I think it was because of my speed and my blocking ability.
Blocking both, right?
Yeah. I didn't mind blocking. I love blocking for Merle Hodge.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as I said, that backfield was going to be a backfield that I never, ever forget in my lifetime.
Yep.
I got one more thing we're going to do here, Tim, today. It's a one word association. I'm going to give you six names of your former teammates. One word, the first word that comes to your mind as I give them to you. Are you ready?
All right.
Here we go. First name on the list, Tim, Bubby Brister. One word association with Bubby.
Rebel.
All right. Number two, Merrill Hodge.
Let's see. So many with Merrill. Tough.
Okay. Tough. Louis Lips.
Consistent.
Number four, Greg Lloyd.
Me. I'm a boy there.
Number five, Rod Woodson.
He's choice.
Okay.
Choice.
And finally, number six, Tim. Gary Anderson, the one face bar, you know, the one face mask bar.
If this could be one word,
yeah,
I would give Gary Anderson the man. I used to mess with Gary a lot. Gary was funny because, you know, he's from South Africa.
He has that accent.
Yes, he has that accent, and I used to mess with him, and he used to be like, "Back off, dickhead."
Gary Anderson, he was one of my all time favorite players.
Tim, what?
Love Gary.
Yeah, Gary was funny, man. He would listen. I used to mess with him just to get him to talk because I love his accent. You know,
the whole locker room just busts out laughing when he starts talking.
Yeah.
Excuse me. All right, so we Gary do a trivia. Crazy,
but he had a foot, bro.
He could. Absolutely, man.
I believe he's still either one or two at the top of the scoring here in Pittsburgh. We do at the end of every show, Tim, we do a trivia question that pertains to what we talked about that day. So we're gonna. Since you're hanging out, we're going to have you play as well today. Guys, before we take off, this is the trivia question of the day. Tim, you may know it faster than Mike because it has to do with you. But just hold on. Let Mike think about it. Guys, on the board, play along. Here we go. Our Tim Worley trivia question. Here we are. Who was the Steelers' starting tight end Tim Worley's rookie year? Who was the Steelers' starting tight end Tim Worley's rookie year? Take a minute to think over, guys. We are live. We're live 5 days a week right here, Monday through Friday, 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. The show that we do live every day, we upload over on Spotify at 8 o'clock p.m. If you would rather just listen to the show, maybe you missed the show or you're in the gym, you want to throw in your earbuds, you could always check out the news show every day over on Spotify. Check it out. All right, guys. So the question of the day is, this is a Tim Worley trivia for our special special episode. The question is, who was the Steelers' starting tight end the year that Tim Worley was a rookie? Mike, you want to take a stab at it?
I'm going to take a stab.
A little bit.
It's not Eric Green because he came in later.
Okay.
I believe. I don't know if he was still playing that, but I'm going to roll the dice and say Cunningham.
All right. Interesting answer. Cunningham, is that your final answer?
Yeah, he's the only one that's popping into my mind that's pre-Eric Green.
I'm going to lock
and
you in
Heath
place.
Miller and Mark Bruner.
Tim, think back. Rookie year, starting tight end. Who was it?
Well, it's a drum roll, but I'm gonna give you guys a little play with it.
Okay.
It's a word that people use when they may be frustrated.
Yeah. Does that help you at all, Mike?
No, it does not. I'm at a complete blank.
You want to hear it?
Yeah, absolutely. I need to hear it.
Here it is, one word. Malarkey.
Mike Malarkey. Mike, I thought you would know that, man.
Oh.
That is the reason why I picked that question, because I thought that you would know Mike Malarkey. But hey, you learned something from Tim Worley today.
Like I said, this was like the first Steeler team I have actual memories of. So it's kind of hazy for me. I remember like the year previous, I was like wanting to be a Dolphins fan. My dad just looking at me like, where did I go wrong?
Right. Well,
you had Malarkey that year, Malarkey, Terry O'Shea.
Yes.
And every once in a while, I think Ouija Thompson would kind of slide down a little bit. Not much, but Malarkey was consistent, man.
Absolutely.
He made some great catches.
Absolutely. Tim Worley, there he is, everybody. I can't describe how this show went today for me. I'm really, really excited, guys. And it's the day before the draft, which is another very exciting time for us. You really made our day, Tim. And, I really believe that our viewers are going to love this particular episode. It was great to talk to you. You're always, always, always welcome back here on the show, Tim. I would love to hear more of your stories. As a matter of fact, we could probably do, we could probably do hours just listening to the things that you know and could tell us. Yeah. And very grateful, my friend.
We might get in trouble. Some of the stories I was talking about when I was in Pittsburgh.
right. Mike, do you have any questions for Tim before he takes off?
I don't know. We covered everything I wanted to talk about today. This is great.
This made my day. Absolutely. Yes. No two ways about it, Tim. This is by far the best thing that's happened to me this year, which, I don't know if that, I don't know what that says about me, but it's it's really exciting and very, very, very glad that you did come by. Yeah. Thank you so much. We wish you all the luck in the world. And again, don't be afraid to hit us up if you're in Pittsburgh or if you just want to come and BS, no matter whatever the case is, my friend, do never hesitate to get a hold of us.
Can I say this to you guys and just for the audience before I leave? I'm humble. Thank you guys for inviting me. You guys, anytime you need me to come on, shoot me a text, shoot me an inbox. And I just want to tell the people out there, give the Lord Jesus Christ a chance. Okay. Right. Give him a chance. He just wants a relationship. Okay. That's it.
Might be the most important thing that you hear today, people. So absolutely take that and keep it and take it inside and consider it. Then I think that Tim Worley is correct. But I want to say thank you so much, Tim.
Yep.
Super awesome having you on, my man. If this didn't cement, if me with the action figure and wanting the jersey and all that kind of stuff as a kid didn't cement you as one of my favorite, if not my favorite Steeler today, certainly did, sir. Thank you so much. You enjoy the draft. Enjoy that weather down there. And like I said, next time you come up to Pittsburgh, man, don't hesitate. We'd love to say hey, at least.
Yeah, we're going to Eddie V's, man.
Hey, I'm in. We're in.
All right, guys. God bless, man. Thank you.
You too. Thanks, everybody. Man. Tim Worley, thank you so much. Have a great day, sir. We will be talking to you in the future.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, man. There you go, everybody. That was Tim Worley, the former Pittsburgh Steeler, number 7 overall pick in the 1989 draft. Amazing. Great to have him on, Mike. One of my favorite episodes to this day.
Yes.
I can't say enough about Tim Worley. Thank you so much, Tim.
Yes, that was great. Oh my God. So many stories that he had.
Absolutely, man. Great stuff.
Yeah.
Mike, anything before we can take off for the day?
I'm just disappointed. I forgot about Malarkey.
That's all right, man. I'll get on.
Once again, I embarrassed myself in front of one of our guests.
Hey, every time.
So the tradition continues, baby.
Yeah,
the
that's
tradition
right.
Continues.
It is. It just isn't right if you're not embarrassing yourself in front of our guests.
Yes.
Derpy, did you have a good time?
Yes.
All right, great, my man. Guys, if that's everything from you, that's going to be it.
Mike, that's everything I Derpy, have. Yeah.
All right. I do want to say thank you, everybody, for checking us out. We appreciate each and every one of you.
Yes.
We wouldn't do it without you. I want to thank everybody on the board, as always, for keeping it interesting. And for Derpy, Mike in the Steeler Central Mobile Studio, myself, the two dumb yinzers, everybody have a great day, and we'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
No.